This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. This message is a warning.
Everyone, hang on!
Carabast. Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions.
Let's go get him.
All right, if I tag along?
I'm on my mark. Get down!
My name is Rex.
The rebels of the Lothal system. Hunt them down. My gut tells me this is a trap.
Everywhere we go, we run into those guys.
Kenobi!
To defeat an enemy, you must know them.
I'm not afraid.
That's what worries me.
Embrace your destiny.
We are fighting a bigger fight.
He was my master.
Ahsoka, why did you leave? Do you know what I've become?
Yes, master.
And now, here's your host, Aaron Harris.
Welcome back to Rebels Reactions. I'm your host, Aaron Harris, and welcome to our second part of our review of Zero Hour, the season 3 finale of Star Wars Rebels. And man, it was a great discussion for part 1. Part 2, we're just going to have an equally great discussion, because joining me again for this discussion, our panelists are back. Joe Taylor and David Motters. Gentlemen, how are y'all doing?
We're doing good.
Yeah, doing good, Aaron.
Excellent, excellent. I'm glad y'all were able to come back and join me to wrap this episode up, because there is, as we discussed last time, there is so much happening in this. We just don't even know where to begin, or much less where to end it. So we split it up, and we're going to review the second part of Zero Hour today. But before we do, let's hit on some Rebels news, okay? Because we've had a few things happen in this past week since we recorded the last episode of Reactions for the first part of Zero Hour. I know last time we were all together, we talked about Celebration and about the Rebels crew coming together, and all the actors were going to be, the voice actors were going to be there, Freddie Prinze Jr. and Vanessa Marshall and Steve Bloom and Taylor Gray were all going to be there. Of course, I just blanked on her name, but Governor Price is going to be there, and of course Sarah Michelle Gellar is going to be there with Seventh Sister. All of them were going to be there, and I made the statement that the only person not coming is Tia Sirkar, so we're not going to have Sabine. But guess what, folks? The family's back together, and as Harris said, we're going to try to keep it that way, because Tia Sirkar has announced this past week that she is going to be joining us at Celebration Orlando. So the whole family will be there, which will be awesome, awesome. If you get to go, definitely and take advantage of that. You can get your autograph and photo tickets through the Celebration website, so that'll be fun. Joe, what were we going to say?
I said I can't go, unfortunately.
Oh, no. I know, man. I was hoping you were going to make it this year, but I definitely understand, and hopefully by the next Celebration we'll be able to get you down here and or California, wherever it's going to be. We don't know yet. So, but definitely that was great news on the Celebration side of things. So we'll have that great reunion there and see everybody together. Other big news that broke actually within the last few days here of us recording this, it was announced the second season of the Freemaker Adventures, the Lego Star Wars Freemaker Adventures, is going to be airing on Disney XD, so that'll be coming out soon. But in the preview, we find out that Vanessa Marshall is reprising her role as Hera Syndulla on the Freemakers. So not only do we get Hera in Rebels, we're going to see Hera as a Lego in action on the Freemakers. Exciting stuff, and she's got a whole new outfit. She's wearing a jacket. If you look at the trailer, which I'll have linked in the show notes there to our report on that. But definitely check out that trailer. Support watch Freemakers. Support Hera. That's going to be and Vanessa. That's going to be absolutely awesome.
I have a reason now, Aaron. I've been wanting to watch this Freemakers. I've been hearing good things about it, but now that Vanessa Marshall's on there, it's like a this is a done deal, man. I got to order season 1 on Blu-ray. I definitely want to do that. And now with her, I'm going to have to jump onto that now.
Definitely. She definitely looked excited about it. I know she was tweeting about it earlier, yesterday, I believe it was. Yesterday from when we recorded this. And is excited about her opportunities there. And it's going to be fun to see her in a new light, because it appears that from the clip that we see, it looks like they're at Yavin Base in this. So we'd be looking timeline pretty much where we're going to be with season four. So maybe this glimpse into her outfit that she's wearing there in Freemakers is an updated outfit we'll see in season four, maybe?
That's interesting.
I know nothing about this series.
Freemakers is good. It's definitely another kids show that Disney XD does. You know, the Legos have always been popular, Lego Star Wars, and this is basically just an offshoot show where basically they're following around they're basically junkers. This is pretty much what they are. They're space junkers that build ships, and the youngest one, which, forgive me, I've watched the whole season one, but I can't remember any of their names. But the youngest one is force sensitive, and he was drawn to locate this special, what they call a kyber saber, which Palpatine was after. And he had an Inquisitor chasing after him, and Vader, and it had some pretty comical things in there. I definitely not canon. At least if they said it was canon, I would be surprised. But with the way especially they portray some of the characters, but definitely not canon, but it's definitely fun for a good laugh and for good entertainment. Okay. It's just an all-around good family show. So you're something that if you got kids and you want them to have a good laugh, that's definitely a way to go, because at one point I know the youngest one in one episode in season one actually dresses up like Palpatine and starts barking out orders, and it's quite humorous because Palpatine winds up standing right next to him, so it's quite humorous. So definitely check it out if you get an opportunity to. Okay,
I'll definitely look into that one.
Perfect. Well, people are tuning in not to hear us talk news or talk Rebels or they're hearing us. They're here to tell it. Wow, that came out completely wrong. Everybody's here to hear us talk about Rebels, not hear us talk about news. So let's talk second part of Zero Hour, okay? Part two, Zero Hour, phenomenal episode. Quick recap on that. Yep. Of course, it opens up with the orbital bombardment of Chopper Base by the Imperials. But fortunately, the shield generator that was stolen by our heroes in a previous episode was put to good use and actually is there to protect from the orbital bombardment. But the bombardment lasts just long enough to weaken them up for a ground assault, which is led by Thrawn himself. Of course, we see great action with a bunch of AT-ATs or AT-ATs, whatever you want to call them. I prefer AT-ATs. Yep. But they come marching in, and we have stormtroopers running around. We have the death troopers running around and just fighting ensuing everywhere. Kallus ends up escaping from his Star Destroyer where he was being held captive. And everything just kind of falls apart for the Empire as Bindu starts to interfere, as he's just absolutely livid with what's going on. And yeah, our heroes wind up being able to escape. Sabine shows up with Ezra and winds up taking out the second interdictor. I remember that one. Not going to stop me twice on that one. On the second interdictor, Star Destroyer, they're able to get that disabled. And, of course, our heroes are able to escape the ultimate destruction by Thrawn on Chopper Base and things in there with the show. It's quite an interesting ending with Thrawn standing over Bindu issuing a prophecy, essentially, is what it was. And, of course, we find out their rebels are what's left of the Phoenix Squadron fleet is limping its way through multiple jump points to get to Yavin Base, which of course we all know Yavin Base from A New Hope, and of course now from Rogue One. So, and there is our recap. A lot of things we want to look at in this, because it's a lot of fun. I know we went last time we talked about our first impressions of the episode of the episodes when we watched it. So we're just going to jump right into our discussion on of the episode. With this episode, we saw the beginning in part one of Thrawn's plan getting put into action. This episode, we get to see the full-fledged assault from his plan go into play. And we get to see his strategy when it comes to using ground forces, not just space forces. As he sends the AT-DTs in to his decoys, to pinpoint locations. We get to see him send the AT-ATs in after that and just begin to completely annihilating things. Thrawn's strategy was pretty solid if it wasn't for Bendu. I think he had a quite a huge success rate at that point. Seeing his tactics go into work with the troops he was using, he flooded the field with stormtroopers running underneath the walkers and everything. What did you think of his bait then attack strategy that he essentially was using to pinpoint everything, Joe?
It shows how much of a brilliant tactician Thrawn was.
It truly does. I mean, definitely we see him put things together in a way that they're not used to at that point. I mean, because we know before he leaves the starship or his Star Destroyer to head down to the planet, Kallus is basically laughing at him, saying, you know, I've done this before with these rebels. They always find a way to survive. And he goes, I've done this 100 times and they always survive. And Thrawn turns and gives him a very scolding look and goes, they will soon find out that I am not you. And it's very direct, like, I'm going to finish what you could never do. And now we know why you never could do it, because obviously you didn't have it in him. He was more rebel than he was imperial. David, with his brief encounter with that discussion with Kallus, and then, of course, his assault, Did you see a difference in his tactics, of course, from Kallus' assaults in earlier seasons on the Rebels?
Well, yeah, I think, like we said, you've got someone who is, like Joe said, just this brilliant tactician. And he does it slower, right? He doesn't approach it like Kallus did in the first two seasons. He really takes his time. You know, we see it throughout this season. If people go back and listen to Rebels reactions, you know, I think about Hera's Heroes. I listened to that one, and you guys had really nice coverage of, you know, that episode and how Thrawn handled it. I mean, I can right now in my mind's eye see the ghost taken off from Hera's home and flying past the Star Destroyer. Or I guess a smaller than Star Destroyer that Thrawn was on, and just letting them go, just piecing it together, waiting for this all to come together. And of course, he says that before we recorded, I watched both part one, part two again, and listened very closely to Thrawn talking to Tarkin, and him saying this is the exact time he wants to attack. So much. More patient approach, a piece by piece approach, and like both you and Joe said, it is amazing that they got away, and we can say more about that as the show goes on.
Oh, absolutely! It is amazing they got away, and there's a lot to discuss in how they got away, because you know, honestly, there's issues with Bendu that opened up in this episode that have people scratching their head as to what his intentions truly were. Speaking of Bendu, I mean, let's go ahead and just jump right into Bendu, because he's such a huge presence. He's been in the background throughout this season. He's had some impact throughout the episode, but a huge impact in this in this finale, as of course he Kanan goes to beseech his help and winds up making him mad in the process. And of course he turns in from the big creature, big lug of a creature that we're used to seeing, turns himself into a massive lightning storm. And he just starts attacking everything and everyone at that point. And he's destroying the Rebel base. He's destroying the Imperials. He's really just trying to destroy everything that's disturbing his peace. And even at the final push where the Rebels, when Kanan and our crew are escaping, he even calls out after Kanan as lightning is shooting all around the ghost. Why do you think Bendu had it out, not just for everybody that was there, but was calling out for Kanan? Did he have it out for Kanan, David?
Well, like you said, this is very confusing. When I, of course, now I've watched it three times. It's very fresh in my head. I'm trying to piece together, like we said, his role in this. This is why back in the part one, when we covered that, you know, one of my initial thoughts was, you know, making the impossible possible. And of course, they're completely surrounded there on Adelon. And then Bendu comes in and starts, you know, destroying everything. It's interesting that, you know, something I mentioned last week is I threw, just to fire everything up, I said, you know, I'm trying to remember, something was the will of the Force, right? And listening tonight to what Bendu was saying to Kanan, he says something along the lines of, perhaps it's the will of the Force, Kanan Jarrus, that the Jedi and all like you should perish. Very interesting statement. Because, you know, Kanan's making the argument, you know, you need to get involved because evil people, you know, are hurting his friends. And I think initially when I watched it the first time, I thought, okay, he did intervene generally on the side of the rebels. But when you watch it, just watching it again tonight, you look, I mean, he's putting lightning bolts through AT-AT walkers. He's putting lightning bolts through A-wings. I was noticing that. And, of course, hits the ghost a couple times, but doesn't destroy the ghost. Destroys, I think, an A-wing next to it. That goes down. Yeah. So I guess I'm – here's my – maybe hopefully my positive side. I kind of feel like Bendu intervened more on the side of the rebels, but I'm still not convinced of that. I think you can see my ambivalence. Maybe I am the one in the middle, like the Bendu as well. So anyways, a long-winded answer to say that I'm confused about the Bendu.
Well, I definitely am confused with Bendu, because definitely he's been touted as a character that's been in the middle. I'm not light, I'm not dark. He even says it in this episode, I'm dark and I'm light, I am Bendu. He rides the fence. He's not what we would consider balanced in the Force. He is pulling obviously from the dark and the light. Now it very much reminds me, the metaphor for Bendu, when it comes into what we, after seeing this episode, reminds me of basically something, you know, not to get spiritual or scriptural or anything like that, but there's the verse in the Bible where it talks about that you can't be hot or cold. You're either hot or cold. You can't be lukewarm. And basically, this is Bendu at this point. He's always said he's in the middle, but yet he's showing more aggressive tendencies of the dark side than he has the wisdom of the light side in this. And it's been very back and forth. The whole season he was very calm, very intellectual, very, you got a good vibe from him. I mean, he'd be very, very Master Yoda-ish almost to metaphor it. But then in this episode, he's very much more Maulish. I mean, he's destroying everything, which it definitely has been, is definitely a confusing part of his character. Joe, what are your impressions of Bendu now after seeing his reactions and his actions in this episode?
I'm not sure, actually.
Bendu, he's been definitely a confusing character especially after seeing this episode. He's become very one of the most confusing characters there is when it comes to Rebels, and definitely is quite interesting because as we begin to see his character come into fruition, he's destroying everything. He's destroying transports, ships in the air, people on the ground. He's destroying everything, and ultimately, you know, our Rebels escape because he interferes in their capture, and we see ultimately all the AT-ATs firing up into the Bendu cloud. The Death Troopers are firing their weapons up into the cloud, and ultimately we wind up seeing Bendu lying on the ground injured with Death Troopers around him, and then Thrawn comes walking up and starts trying to figure out what he's looking at. And Bendu's very tactful in how he deals with Thrawn. And basically, Thrawn's asking him, what kind of creature are you? And Bendu has the best response of pretty much anything I've seen in this episode. It has some of the best responses because Bendu looks at him and basically goes, something out of your what was the exact line? Something you are unable to destroy. Then Thrawn pulls his blaster and points it straight at Bendu's head and goes, I beg to differ. And then he goes into almost this prophetic speech about Thrawn, about how he sees how the Admiral is going to die. And it's very chilling because it catches Thrawn completely off guard. This is a guy who is not caught off guard easily because he's always very strategic in how he acts. And it's very interesting to see how that's played out. And it's very deep because Bendu basically says, I see your defeat like many arms surrounding you in a cold embrace. And you see Thrawn's eye it focuses in on Thrawn's eyes and it gets real big. And then it tightens down like he's furious. And you hear him pull the trigger on his blaster and the blaster fire. But then when it pans out, all you hear is Bendu laughing and Bendu's gone. He's vanished. He's gone. Just nowhere to be found. Which is chilling because then you got that now starting to brew back into the back of your mind. Because, of course, if you're a Thrawn fan, you know in the books how in the old Legends books from the Thrawn trilogy, how he meets his demise. And it's, you know, definitely, you know, he dies in those. So, you know, something's going to have to happen to him eventually, you would think. So it gets that kicking around your head. But also, you know, it's got to start playing with Thrawn's head a little bit too. Because you see how he reacts. So definitely that affected him in some way. Yeah. How did that make you feel when Bendu is basically just telling Thrawn, oh yeah, I know you're dying. You're going to get it.
Oh gosh. It was awesome. You know, like you said, Aaron, the close up on Bendu's face, really a super close up on his eyes, and then the close up on Thrawn's eyes. I love how they shoot that. And the thing that I was thinking about, and I had written these notes down, you know, obviously when we first started recording last week, was that Thrawn Bendu conversation reminded me of Luke in the Dagobah cave, and he's down there, and it's obviously very visual, very interpretive, right? You can interpret a lot of different ways. And of course, Luke takes that swipe at Vader and the mask comes off. And then there's Luke's face inside. And there's what does it mean? I remember back in 1980 when I saw that as a young kid, you know, it is so hard to know what that meant. But this reminded me that of as well. It's trying to foretell the future a bit, right? And very similar here, where you've got Bendu down on the ground, Thrawn up above, just like with Luke looking down at the mask and it opens up and it shows his face. It just struck me as a callback to that. But in terms of feeling, I loved it when Bendu says, you cannot see, you know, you're blinded. But Bendu can see. And so it was chilling. And I think Thrawn's got a lot to think about as the season comes up here. And of course, the other thing that makes me even more interested in getting Timothy Zahn's new book coming out here next week. Of course, they'll have the special edition of it at Celebration. I got to get my hands on that and just read it and see what they do. I'd be curious, Aaron, if this book is set. Did they tell us? I think they did tell us when it's set. Do you remember, Aaron? Did they say it's before the heir to the Empire? Or
it gives us his background. It's his origin story at this point. From what I read, because they did release the sample of the book a few weeks ago, which was really cool. And it seems to be like it's going to be, from what I can gather, almost like basically a prequel type story for him, giving us his background.
Yeah.
Similar to what they kind of did, they're doing with Han Solo in the spinoff movie. They're just giving us some of his backstory to what made him who he is.
How far is it going to take us back to, like, the Clone Wars and him there after Order 66? That'll be interesting. We'll see, I guess, right?
We'll definitely have to see. It didn't specify how far back it was going, but it just said it was going to, from what I understand, it's just going to be a study of, basically, it's going to be a book, the story of who he is, what of his background and how he became who he was. How he became the character we saw in Rebels at this point.
Oh, man, I can't wait, Aaron. I can't wait. And that conversation between him and Bendu gets me thinking about all those things. It gives me the feels. I'm excited. I'm curious to see what happens. And maybe, you know, will it show his demise in season 4? It'd be interesting.
It definitely will be interesting, and as much as I like Admiral Thrawn, I definitely would hate the idea of seeing him pass. You know, it's inevitable, I guess, at some point he's going to have to go at some point. I just can't think of a way I would like seeing him go. I think I had this discussion earlier in the season when he was first introduced. Is we were talking about the character and his background in the legends and how he wound up being stabbed in the back by one of his subservient alien creatures in Timothy Zahn's books in the original Thrawn trilogy, and how it didn't sit too well with me how he died, but at the same point, when asked how I would want him to have died, there's no way I can imagine him going down. You know, I can't see him going down in a blaze of glory because his strategies were always so perfect and so precise. Nothing could stop him. Except for, like, in this situation, an outside influence, which was unprecedented with the Bendu interfering. Yeah. But even then, he was very successful in this campaign. He destroyed the majority of the Rebel fleet. He destroyed Chopper base, and now the Rebels are on the run. You know, granted, he didn't reach his ultimate goal of destroying everybody and ending the rebellion, but he was very successful in putting the Rebels and Phoenix Squadron on the run, which is still a successful campaign by any means. But Bendu kept him from his original goal.
Agreed. Yep.
So it'll be interesting to see where he goes and how that happens and where it plays out. And just so everybody knows, like Bindu disappeared at the end of this episode, our pal Joe had to depart from us. He was feeling a little under the weather, and definitely we wish him the best. And don't worry, Joe, we'll get you back on next season, my friend. But we'll get better, and we wish you the best, my friend. So, but show must go on, and we're going to jump right back into things and continue on with our discussion of Zero Hour. We see the return of Sabine Wren in this episode. Of course, she had left a couple episodes ago, staying on Mandalore with her family to what she said was she could do more good staying on Mandalore than she could being with the Ghost crew. And obviously it was a good decision, because when Ezra escaped the blockade and was turned down by Mon Mothma when he asked for help, he went to Sabine. And we got to see her come back, and we got to see her family. We got to see her brother Tristan. We got to see her mom, Ursa, and got to see Fen Rao, who stayed behind with her all on Mandalore. And we find out, of course, some interesting facts about what's going on at this point, because now Mandalore is engaged in a civil war. And apparently it's Gar Saxon's family and the Saxon clan versus, of course, the Wren clan now, and of course whatever other clans are out there picking their own sides, I guess. But we see some interesting changes in the family, and what I noted right off the bat was Sabine's painting their armor now. Did you catch that, David?
Yeah, you mean painting other Mandalorians' armor?
Yeah, yeah. Sure. Her brother Tristan had a love cat on his shoulder guard, which I found very ironic. I mean, he takes a bean out of the rebellion, but she's still going to paint it all up. So,
yes.
I enjoyed seeing that artistic side of her still going on. But of course, we have Ezra asking for help. And of course, initially Tristan's like, we're in the middle of a civil war and this is not going to happen. We're stretched too thin. We can't. But, Sabine basically stands up and she's like, look, you know, yeah, I'm going with them. And there's a discussion. And of course, then Sabine's mom steps up and she's like, you know what? Bridger brought his friends brought my daughter back to me. And that's a debt worth repaying. And I mean, basically they do the honorable thing and they step up, and they can't send all their forces that they would like to, but they take a few ships and they go and assist. And Sabine says something very interesting, and it goes right along with the statement you made earlier in this episode and that you've made in the past as well. Sabine basically says, my friends have the ability to make the impossible possible, make impossible things possible. In talking about how they can escape, if there's a way, there's a way they can escape Thrawn, they're going to find it. They make that impossible situation possible, which was a very interesting for Sabine to say, because I mean, she immediately relates that back to her family. I never thought I was going to be back with you, and they made it happen. And it's something I never would have dreamed would have happened. And it's very relational to what she's experiencing at this point. When it came to Sabine interacting with her family and basically making that pitch for them to go, how did that, I mean, what were your thoughts on how that Mandalorian whole scenario played out at that point?
Oh yeah. You know, that's why, you know, when you made a decision to have two different episodes. It worked out well, because one of the biggest things was that I wanted to hold off on, you know, describing Sabine saying that. I mentioned it in our first episode covering this season finale, but that's where I got it from, is her saying making the impossible possible. And there's three different scenarios in these two episodes that really made me think about that. One is Ezra getting through the blockade, right, because of Sato's sacrifice. The second one is just as you described, Sabine, you know, being able to come and help, and both Sabine and her mother both having that stance where they thought it was going to be impossible for them to ever have a relationship again, but it happens through the help of Kanan and Ezra a few episodes ago, right? The Trials of the Darksaber and all that kind of stuff. And then the other part of making the impossible possible, I thought about, was just how close they all came to dying from the aerial bombardment. And, you know, one of the things I thought about is you see Dodonna there, you see Hera. It looks like maybe Wedge is standing next to Hera. I was looking, trying to figure out that character model. But, you know, I kept thinking how critical Dodonna is in episode 4. And, you know, you see him get off one of the frigates on an escape pod, and then there's the aerial bombardment, and then you have Thrawn, you know, surrounding them on Adelon, and he says the first person that he's going to take out is the general, right? General Dodonna. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I mentioned it in the last episode that when Luke hits that shot and Han says that was one in a million, kid, that, you know, making the impossible possible. And by having all this in the season finale, it just really... What's the thing, you know, I hear Star Wars fans talk about things feeling Star Warsy. Does this feel like Star Wars? And when you have this theme of making the impossible possible, you're hitting it, you know, from the original movie. And I know it's your favorite. It's been my favorite from the beginning. It started it all. And so when you ask that, I get so excited because this episode, or two episodes, I guess, really, really play that out in a number, three different main scenarios throughout this season finale.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. I mean, Star Wars is made its, I mean, the biggest thing in Star Wars is making the impossible possible. Whether it's a New Hope, whether it's the impossibility of a small strike force taking out a shield generator on a small moon so the second Death Star can be attacked. There's always that impossibility there. The two Jedi taking on a droid army. There's always an impossibility somewhere in Star Wars, and it's consistent. And definitely that added to the Star Wars feel of this. Even that impossible scene, I mean, is even more real when, first, when they blow up the ATDPs and they think they've succeeded, and Zeb and Rex are talking like, "Yeah, that was great, yeah." And all of a sudden, you hear the AT-ATs stepping, and they're like, "I know that sound." And all of a sudden, they turn and look, and they're like, "We got nothing to blow those guys up with." They just kind of have to start retreating at that point. I mean, the impossible's happening. The A-wings come in. The A-wings try to come in and help, but Thrawn orders TIE fighters in, and that clears out the A-wings. So again, we got Zeb and Rex running away. Then we have good old blind Kanan come running in with his saber and do something I wish Luke Skywalker would have done on Hoth, and it was just sliced through the legs of an AT-AT to down it, essentially. I still don't understand why they never did that in Return in Empires. I'll never understand that. Because supposedly the armor was so thick it couldn't be blasted. Why would you be able to cut through it? But hey, you know, it's semantics. I'll have to pull in Andy Gutierrez and track down Pablo at Celebration and say, "I got a few questions for you." So I'll have my own Rebels Recon.
That's right. Have your recorder, you know.
A quarter I'm in the bathroom or something. Pablo, answer these questions for me. I probably just got myself barred from Celebration for that. But
No, I don't think so. I think what strikes me, Aaron, is I think he'd have. I know he'll have an answer for that. He's thought that through.
Oh, of course he has. The whole story group has, and it's always. I'm sure it's been discussed. But definitely, it's something that always confused me. But it happens. I mean, the impossible is making the impossible possible. Has always happened in Star Wars. The possibility of this Mandalorian strike force coming out of hyperspace and having their troopers land on the hull of the
Interdictor.
Why do I keep wanting to say indicator? Interdictor. I do that every week. The Interdictor droid. Star Destroyer. The Interdictor Star Destroyer. Landing on the hull of that Interdictor Star Destroyer and then just running up to one of the generators and trying to blast it. Impossible. Impossible, possible. And it's just, a fantastic. That's what makes Star Wars Star Wars. It's a fantastic story. And it definitely is fun in those regards. And it was fun to see Sabine back too, because we all love Sabine.
Oh my gosh. I thought of something else, Aaron. I've read The Making of Star Wars, the big coffee table book. I have all three of them. But when you look at what George Lucas went through to get that first movie made in 76, 77, it was close to impossible. It's just a fascinating thing. It's such a metaphor for what happens in the movies. He goes through a deep depression after they finish filming in Tunisia, right? In 76, he got not even close to all the shots he wanted to get. Even Return of the Jedi, you see that when they're filming the scenes out in Yuma, Arizona, for the sail barge and all that, he's having heart palpitations, George Lucas. Mm-hmm. He's going through a divorce. He's got two young children, obviously, that he and his wife adopted. But I believe his doctor was saying, you need to get off the set of Return of the Jedi. You need to rest. And, of course, he's got everything on the line to finish out that original trilogy. And the whole thing from 1976 through 83 is making the impossible possible. Unbelievable what he went through. Even with Empire, right? He put all his money on the line. It was his money. It wasn't 20th Century Fox, and it went over budget. And if that movie fails, there's no Return of the Jedi. Each one, when you read about them, the impossible happened. It's lightning in a bottle three times, and it's allowed us to enjoy, Star Wars for 40 years now.
It truly has, and it's what's allowing us to do what we do today and what we're doing right now. Possible has been made possible time and time again. And it's something that definitely, as you definitely mentioned, it comes right back to George Lucas. He made the impossible possible against all odds, which is just phenomenal. And it's nice to see that message and that situation is being replayed time and time again in different scenarios and different timelines, but it's still there. That impossible being made possible is still occurring and time again. And it's nice to see. To me, it's just a nod to somebody who who's given us decades upon decades upon decades of happiness and joy, essentially. Because definitely Star Wars has brought a lot of people together. It's brought a lot of happiness and a lot of joy, a lot of entertainment. And it seems like it's going to for many decades and years to come. So,
absolutely.
So we got the battle ensuing in this episode. We got the battle of Chopper Base going through, and it's going on, as we mentioned earlier, and we wind up seeing Kanan and Zeb and Rex wind up making it back to the base, and they join up with Hera and Daldana around the conference table as they find out, as they're assessing the situation, trying to figure out what to do, and basically they're still trying to evacuate the base, because by this point the shield generator's gone down and things are just really falling apart for the rebellion at this point. They're on their heels. Even as Thrawn's shuttle lands and his death troopers are coming out, he even says, fine, to search the base, destroy everything. He goes, destroy any rebel ships that attempt to leave and storm the base. And if you find the leadership, if possible, capture the leadership. If possible. You don't have to do it, but if possible, capture them. Well, apparently, the impossible became possible for Thrawn, and his troops actually did capture Kanan and Rex and Zeb and Hera and Daldana as they were attempting to make it back to the Ghost. And Thrawn walked up as his death troopers have them all surrounded and basically looks at him and goes, I'll accept that formal surrender now. Of course, we know at the beginning of the first episode, when he chimed in, he's like, I don't want your surrender. I want to make you pay, essentially, is what he had said. And now that he's beaten them down, he's destroyed the base, his troops have overrun it, he's got them surrounded, I'll take that formal surrender now. But he doesn't leave it there. He follows it up with, or else you can walk. And he's talking to Hera at this point. He's like, or you can watch all your friends die one by one. Okay. Very, very
such a nice guy. Such a nice guy.
I know, such a nice guy. Yeah, okay. Don't say nobody ever gave you options, Hera. he gave you an option. But it was very, very, very... You can feel his confidence at this point, because he's smiling essentially while he's saying this, and it's very, very energetic. He's very passionate. He knows he's got this one. Essentially, his confidence. What did he say? Confidence is your weakness. Is what Luke tells the Emperor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and basically that's what winds up happening with Thrawn at this point. He's extremely confident. He's got this one. He's got the troops surrounded. He's got the leadership surrounded. He's got Daldana. He's got Kanan, and he's like, I got you. Surrender or watch your friends die. Either way, and he basically says he'll begin with the Jedi. But then about that point, Hera's like, you know what my answer is going to be, and all of a sudden Bindu arrives with the big thunderstorm and lightning, and it's just going everywhere. And Thrawn says something to Kanan that I find quite interesting, because we've been going through season after season of Rebels, and it's always been Kanan Jarrus, Kanan Jarrus. He's a Jedi. He's a Jedi. Jedi Knight. Jedi Knight. Thrawn is a, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's the first time I remember hearing it, but Thrawn actually refers to him as Master Jedi.
Interesting.
He's like, does the storm frighten you, Master Jedi?
Interesting.
As Bindu's basically sitting there. So that shows you the kind of level of respect. I mean, basically that shows a level of respect that he has for Kanan at that point, in my eyes. I mean, why refer to him as a master if he's never referred to himself as a master? Kanan's never been referred to as a master, to my knowledge, that I recall at all. And if I'm wrong, somebody will correct me, and I'm sure. But definitely, it was almost a show of respect at that point. Not only is he going to be the first one taken out, he's referring to him as a Master Jedi. Why do you think Thrawn has disrespect for Kanan?
I think it's been, earned over time in Thrawn's eyes. You know, the abilities of this rebel group, and he knows they're being aided by, Kanan and Ezra. But that makes the most sense to me, that he really does know them. Obviously, studies Sabine's art. as well as Hera, and you know, of course, he can go back just like the Inquisitor did and learn the history of Kanan at the Jedi Temple and so on and so forth. But I do think that, you know, it is that sign of respect that he knows his enemies, and he knows that Kanan is top notch as part of this rebellion.
Excellent. Definitely. And he certainly is. I mean, he's been there quite a few times and has pulled everybody's tail out of a sling more than once or twice. One thing I do have to mention in this scene that's quite humorous is Bindu is attacking and everything's being destroyed and everybody runs off in different directions. Everybody takes off running for the ghost, the captives do, and following up behind everybody is AP-5. He's got his little arms out and it's running. It reminded me a lot of 3PO and Empire Strikes Back. Just a little nod there.
Absolutely. I wrote that down. AP-5 running like 3PO in episode 5 on Hoth. Absolute homage to that.
Oh, it was. I definitely got a kick out of that. And it just ran across my show. For those of you that don't know or are new to the show, I always have the episode playing in the background. So that just happened on the screen. That's why I brought it, went ahead and had to bring it up. It was priceless. But Thrawn, when back to this captive point, Thrawn, after referring to Jedi Master, Kanan as a Jedi Master, and asking me if he's scared of the storm, Kanan quickly replies, yeah, I am, and you should be too. And next thing you know, Bindu starts talking. I am the Bindu. And the lightning is striking everywhere. And Thrawn turns around and basically says, what kind of Jedi trickery is this? He thinks it's something Kanan is doing. To me, that really blew my mind, that he would think Kanan would have the power to do that. But then again, the more I thought about it, you know, after the Order 66, the propaganda machine was spun that the Jedi were evil and that they were had all the, what Han Solo say, mystical powers of the Force. And this could have been part of the mystical power of the Force that was spun, per se. So, that whole Jedi trickery thing, Jedi treachery thing, he threw out there, blaming Bindu, essentially Bindu on Kanan, I thought was quite interesting. Did you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it is very interesting. You know, like you said, you nailed it. The whole issue of what was told to all of them. You know, I go back to the. What's that main room in the Death Star where you see Tarkin talking to all the top brass the conference room there, right? The Death Star conference room. And he basically tells them what he even says to Vader, you know, the Jedi, you know, is a light that's been extinguished or something to that effect in the galaxy. And so just like we said for Thrawn, this comes out of nowhere. Just like the question you asked earlier about Thrawn's tactics and his strategy, I mean, it's impeccable. And he's got this thing and it's nailed down. He's got Dodonna, he's got Hera, he's got the whole crew, and has really, you know, obviously out in space and now down on the base, has just gone through them like a hot knife through butter. And when this whole Bindu thing happens, you know, it does have to freak him out, particularly, you know, obviously, he works with Tarkin. He's heard Tarkin say the same thing that was said in the Death Star conference room, which is, you know, this is gone. There's none of that stuff. And so when you see a cloud throwing lightning bolts down, you know, you have to be thinking, you know, some kind of weirdness is going on. How do you make sense of that when you've been, you know, he's been inundated with all of the propaganda as well, that all of that's gone. But then when he sees it's not, you know, he's not sure what to do with it. And again, this will be interesting as the season progresses, what his thoughts are on it. You know, if he has discussions with Tarkin about this, if he asks them, you know, wouldn't that be interesting? You know, Thrawn asking Tarkin, hey, you know, here's what I saw on Adalon. What do you think about this? You know, I'm not sure they'll have that conversation or Filoni will do that, but it would be fascinating to see that and how Tarkin would handle that. But yeah, I think his response is one of, wait, what's going on? And again, you know, this is impossible, right? What, a cloud is destroying the plan I've had for, you know, weeks and months or however long, this probably a year in the planning or whatever. But but yeah, for Thrawn, it's got to be quite the surprise.
No, absolutely. Quite the surprise. And it definitely made, definitely put a damper on his plans and made things more difficult. And I mean, he was still quite successful, but didn't reach his ultimate goal because of that. Yeah. So I'm sure we're not done with this. I'm sure we're going to hear more about Thrawn and Bindu, and I'm sure Thrawn's not going to let this go. He's going to do what he does best. He's going to pull back. He's going to analyze. He'll research, and then he'll act. And I don't think he'll walk away from Bindu. I think he'll come back at. I personally think he would come back after Bindu. Because if it is a Jedi, if it is a Jedi force, you know, Jedis are the enemy. So he would come back. I would believe he would come back for Bindu, but we'll see. Yeah. We'll see how that plays out. And now that will we even see Bindu again? Because now that the rebels have evacuated Chopper Base, Bindu, of course, his home is Echelon or Echelon
or whatever. Adalon.
That's right. Sorry. Adalon, where Chopper Base is. So will we ever see him again? Will they return to this base knowing that the Empire knows it's there? What's the Empire done to the planet now at this point? Are they going to gas it? Are they going to go back to his ships and bombing the snot out of it like he was doing, just to try to get Bindu? I mean, we don't know. It'd be interesting to see what they do with Bindu at this point, whether he's done for or whether we'll see him next season. I don't know. I want to know, though.
Oh, no doubt. I tend to think probably not. I don't think we'll see him. You look at this episode, and again, just watching both parts of it tonight before we recorded, you know, just looking at everything they brought in from each episode, you know, they bring in all these assets, you know, they built them, they put them into previous episodes, and they bring them all in. So to not use him doesn't seem like a pattern that they've done. But at the same time, I kind of got the feeling they won't, but I don't know. I guess I hope I'm wrong. It'd be interesting to see him some more. But like you said, we'll see. We'll see.
We'll definitely see. We got some time to let the speculation run wild about what we'll see in season four. But you know, we're not going to speculate. We're not. It's one thing we try not to do here. It's just present the facts. And definitely we want to just see where this plays out at this point. So,
yeah.
All right, so we need to hit on a few more things here because we have another part of the story here to tell, which, of course, is the continuation of Agent Kallus' storyline. As we know from the first part of Zero Hour, which we discussed last week, he was, in the last episode, he basically was found out, and he was captured and taken into custody and got beat up by Thrawn in hand-to-hand combat, one-on-one. And Thrawn now knows he has known, but finally exposed, that he is the rebel spy. He's been the mole. And, of course, he is basically holding on to Kallus and basically almost trying to make him watch the destruction of of the rebels he was helping. He kept them guarded by his death troopers and on the bridge of the Star Destroyer. through the space attack at the end of the last episode and through the beginning of this episode, too, before he goes down to the planet. They have that brief discussion about how Kallus is like, I've done this a dozen times, and they always find a way to escape. You'll never succeed. And Thrawn makes the whole statement, I'm not you. And then, of course, the Death Troopers turn over guard duty to Stormtroopers, which did not seem like a real brilliant idea to me. But hey, you know, I'm not in command. But I guess the Death Troopers have to go where Thrawn goes, and so be it. But they leave Governor Price in command of the Star Destroyer, and as things are progressively getting worse for the Empire in this battle, as the I can't even say it a second time. I just said it 5 minutes ago. Interdictor Star Destroyer is being attacked.
And there you go.
Took me a second. I'll get it eventually. By the time we never have to talk about these ships anymore, you know, Interdictor ships being attacked and it's being destroyed. It winds up being destroyed, and things are just, you know, not going well in orbit for Governor Price. And Kallus, as the Interdictor is being destroyed and it's blowing up, and Kallus makes a off statement like, yeah, Thrawn's, you're really going to make Thrawn happy now. And, of course, that really gets under Price's skin. She's like, throw him out an airlock. So the Stormtroopers escort him into an elevator. And this is the best part of Kallus's in this episode, because the door closes, and as the door closes, you see him standing there, and you see just this devilish grin appear on his face. It's like, I just got what I wanted. And he, next thing you know, the elevator opens back up, and guess what? Somebody doesn't have his cuffs on, and there are two downed Stormtroopers lying at his feet.
That is awesome.
I tell you, that was phenomenal. I enjoyed seeing that, because he's kind of, you know, checking his wrists and everything. It's a very, almost a very James Bondish type of moment. I felt, you know, Bond gets in an elevator, two bad guys. Next thing you know, Bond walks out, and there's no bad guys. It's just very, very, very fun. And he makes his way to an escape pod and sends his fulcrum message, and he's picked up by the rebels. The ghost swings through and picks them up on their way out through the fleet to make their escape, locks onto them, brings them on board. And there's a very interesting conversation between Kanan and Kallus at the end of this episode. And as Kanan, Kallus thanks him for, thank you for basically saving me. Thank you. And then Kanan just kind of, you know, looks at him, but he really can't look at him, but turns toward him and puts his hand on his shoulder and goes, no, thank you for all that you've done and your sacrifice.
Yeah.
And Kallus just kind of stands there. He's almost like he's taken back by the gratitude, because, you know, Kallus at this point just lost everything he knows. The Empire's been his home for probably most of his life. He's been in the service of the Empire. He just lost his career. He just lost his home. He's lost all he has is the uniform he's wearing. And for somebody to thank him and is now giving him another chance, you can tell he's slightly taken aback by that. And I think he is finally seeing more of that family that he witnessed at the end of Honorable Ones. How do you think this played out for Kallus? How do you think he felt about this whole situation at this point, especially the way he is in where he's ending up now?
Yeah. To continue what we covered in the first part of our coverage of this, you know, I talked about that, you know, Dr. Abraham Maslow's concept of self-actualization, and that being at the very top of the pyramid of development for us humans. And in this, you know, we see the full, you know, changeover for him, I guess. Well, I mean, obviously he's, you know, Fulcrum, and he's already helping them. He's switched from the Empire over to the Rebels. But this, you know, like you said, that scene between him and Kanan was so, I'm going to use a word that Dan Zare uses, poignant. All right. Yeah. And it was so poignant, you know, like you said, and described it, and puts his hand on him. And when Kanan says it, you know, with Freddie Prinze Jr.'s voice, so sincerely, thank you for risking everything. And just the look, how they animated it for Kallus, I had in my head the word yes. And I felt good for Kallus. And I do think, like you said, the exact opposite response from Kanan that he gets from Constantine right at the end, which is, oh, I didn't know you were back, Kallus. And so the complete rejection to complete acceptance. And it's huge. Again, to throw a little psychology in here, most people say that the biggest fear that Americans have is public speaking, yet most of us don't public speak on a daily basis. But every day, every one of us is looking at what I always call A versus R, acceptance versus rejection. Are people accepting us or are people rejecting us? And clearly in that episode, Honorable Ones, he was rejected. And this one, he's accepted. And it means everything to us when people accept us. And so you can see that. You can hear it in the voices, the voice actors. You can see it in the animation of the Kallus character model and stuff. It's so well done. And so it's just excellent. I just really loved how they finished that up in this episode. Now, clearly, you know, next season, you know, he'll have more. But like I said, we're not going to speculate. It'll be exciting to see more of his character arc next season. But those just a few of my thoughts, but very, very well done.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's going to be interesting to see where they develop him. Because I said it last episode, and I'll say it again this episode. In my opinion, Kallus is the best fleshed out character they have on this episode. Mm. He's gone through more growth and more twists and turns than anybody else in this series, in my opinion. I mean, he started out leading squads after squads of stormtroopers against the rebels. I mean, one of the most chilling lines to me, one of my most favorite lines from Rebels of all time was in that first episode when he's leading that assault against Kanan and the crew. At Kessel when they're rescuing the Wookiees, and Kanan's like, it's time for them to find out the truth. And he's assembling his lightsaber and you hear Kallus go, "Troopers, focus your firepower on." And all of a sudden you hear the lightsaber ignite and Kanan takes a stance. He's like, "The Jedi." And I mean, to me, that was the line that hooked me into this show from the very beginning. I loved it. It was to hear that kind of emotion there at the beginning, and just see how he's been fleshed out through his encounters with the crew, then seeing his complete and total the complete and total change of heart from what happened in Honorable Ones going forward. He's got to be one of the most fleshed out characters this series has at this point. Because if you look at all the other people in here, yes, they've all had growth. They've all had things they've had to deal with. But we've never had... But not even Kanan when he went blind. They has gone through what Kallus has gone through and as much fleshing out as he's had. Yes, we've had a lot of deep moments with especially since Kanan lost his sight, as to self-searching and trying to find his role in the universe, and a lot of fleshing out there. But coming from looking at all three seasons together, I mean, it's Kallus. It always comes back to Kallus. And I am so happy he's still around, and I'm happy he's on this side of the fence now to see where they take him. So.
Oh, very well said. Very well said.
And season four is going to be fun. I can't wait for season four to come around. And honestly, the end of this episode, without even people realizing it, is giving us a glimpse of what we're going to be seeing coming up in season four. If you watch that final scene after Kallus is rescued, after the fleet jumps up to hyperspace, the whole Thrawn scene with Bindu, it cuts back to the Rebel fleet. And you see Kanan pretty much walking through the ghost. If you listen, you're picking up pieces of conversation as they're going on. There's a conversation between Sabine, Hera, and, of course, Sabine's mom, who's on HoloLink communication. And she's like, you know, thanking you for helping us in our time of need. We're forever grateful. And then Sabine's like, I want to help. We need to repay this and help my mom. They're struggling. And Hera tells her, y'all can go, but I got to get these people to the Rebel base. So we see that coming. We know that is going to be happening eventually. We're going to see Mandalore again. We're going to see the struggles that we're going to go there. Then we find out they're on their way to Yavin base. We hear Rex and AP5 and Chopper discussing how to make the jumps, and so they're not tracked or traced. And they're like, we'll take two jumps. AP5's like, we should take two jumps to hide our course and location. And Rex was like, well, I was really thinking we should make three jumps before we make it to Yavin. So we know they're going to Yavin 4, which is a huge base and a lot of stuff happening on Yavin. Luke and Han wind up on Yavin. Leia's on Yavin. So who knows who we're going to see next season. We may see the return of Princess Leia next season. We don't know. They'll be on Yavin. We very well could. There's so much going on. Then there's ultimately the discussion between Kanan and Ezra right there at the end. And we know we're going to see. And that tells me right then and there, we're going to see a lot of, to me, that tells me we're going to see a lot of Kanan and Ezra story.
Yeah.
Kanan basically is, Ezra is pretty down. He's like, man, we've lost everything. We lost our base. We lost most of our fleet. We've lost it all. We're on the run. And Kanan's like, you know, I've got a new perspective on things. And yes, we're down, but we're not out. And we're going to make this happen. We are going to be free. And that's where it pretty much ends at that point. And it was just such a poignant moment. Stealing Dan's word again.
That's right.
Dan, you come up with great words, we're going to use them. So a very powerful, very poignant moment. And these are just little, you know, morsels of what we're going to see in season 4, and it's going to be awesome. It's going to be fantastic. I completely love it, and it's going to be great, and I can't wait. But that is Zero Hour in a nutshell. I mean, that was definitely a phenomenal episode. I got to say, this was probably, out of all the episodes we've had of Rebels, this probably had more jammed into it in its 22 minutes than any other episode of Rebels could have done. There's so many nuggets, so many tidbits jammed into it. And not even just 22 minutes. It's actually 44 minutes, both episodes put together. But there was just so much in there. So let's go ahead and wrap this up. David, final thoughts for Zero Hour?
Oh, definitely. I have three final thoughts. Just before that, though, I'm looking at a little note I put here, all the little things. And like you said, all the little things jammed into this. I completely agree with you. The mouse droid, Ezra's old hideout on Lothal, going back there. I love seeing that. Ezra not having a jetpack, and that was just cracking me up. Sabine giving him grief when they're on the interdictor, and she goes, "No, you have little thrusters on that." Just, yeah, I love that. I love that. Like you said, the shield that Sabine and Zeb take off of Geonosis, and how they bring that into this episode. Another thing that you and I didn't talk about: Rex and Zeb talking about Jupers. That was the very beginning of season 2, and that little thing. All the music cues. Oh gosh. Just like you said, Kevin Kiner just killing it. And like we said, AP5 running just like C-3PO out of Hoth, on Hoth, and trying to get to the Millennium Falcon. But absolutely, and that's just me writing down just some of the things that was packed into these, like you said, 44 minutes. But just final thoughts, real quick. You know, I asked myself a couple things. One, does it leave me wanting more? You know, and I wrote emphatically, yes. I want to see more of the Rebels, more of their individual stories, them as the Ghost crew. I want to see what happens to Thrawn. Especially like we said, what Bendu says, I'm curious to see how that plays out. More of Yavin, that'll be so interesting, particularly Rogue One, and what we saw in the movie Rogue One with the Ghost being there, Chopper being there, them announcing, you know, Hera, General Syndulla's name. So yes, absolutely. I'm wanting more. You and I were nervous several weeks ago. Are we going to get a season 4? They announced it way late. So very thankful it's coming in, and I definitely want to see more. Second question I asked myself, does it move the story forward? You know, this whole Star Wars story. And I put, again, an emphatic yes. Kanan and Ezra are closer. You know, we really saw them at the beginning of the first of the two episodes talking and very, very positively towards each other. I really enjoyed seeing Hera call Kanan love again, moving that forward, the family there. Sabine's family and Mandalore, moving that story forward. Thrawn, his entire story, it was pushed forward this entire season. The end of Constantine, you know, I believe he's gone, and Sato, so it moved that whole forward. I put a question mark, like we said, is Bendu gone? Those will be questions with the story. And then I put the note pulling us closer to episode 4. So it definitely moves us closer and closer to that, especially with them going to Yavin Base. And then the last thing I asked myself is, this as good as Twilight of the Apprentice? You know, I hear people all the time ranking all the Star Wars movies and things like that. So I would ask myself that. And my answer was this, is it's not quite as good as Twilight of the Apprentice, but it's up there. And I just wrote down, in Twilight of the Apprentice, we get Ahsoka versus Vader, the Sith Temple, Maul, you know, Kanan's blinded, and all of that. And that's not even doing it justice, obviously. But in this one, you know, the epic space battle, the spacewalk with Ezra and all of them, that is just incredible. The Mandalorian rockets, when they all point their heads down and the rockets shoot, you know, into the gravity well, unbelievable. Like you said last week, edge of my seat. And then the ground battle was really cool. So, again, love this. I know we're going to rate it here in a minute, but I still think Twilight of the Apprentice, the season 2 finale, is slightly better. But this one is right up there.
Perfect. Perfect. And Twilight of the Apprentice will always be the measuring stick for Rebels, I got a feeling, because it was probably one of, if not the most anticipated episode of the series. We all knew, especially when they found out Ahsoka was Fulcrum, we all knew eventually there had to be that Vader-Ahsoka meetup, and it definitely lived up to its title. I mean, it was phenomenal. This is right up there with it, absolutely. It was because of everything that happened. It wasn't just the one thing, like with Twilight Apprentice, the whole thing that made that episode so phenomenal was the ultimate Vader Ahsoka fight, and that reunion. That was incredible. But with this, everything about this episode fired on all cylinders. They went everywhere. They were dealing with the Mandalorians and bringing Sabine back in. We had sacrifice with Sato sacrificing himself. We had just pure insubordination from Constantine. We had a really, really angry Bendu. he needs to take, oh, yeah. needs to take oh, a yeah. pill. We had a really angry Bendu. We had true peril for our heroes at this point. You could definitely tell this was made not knowing if that fourth season was going to happen, because they could have easily ended the show with this episode and it would have made sense. They were on their way to Yavin.
Oh yeah.
They were on their way to Yavin. We know they make it to Yavin because we see them and we see the ghost in Rogue One, General Syndulla's page. We see Chopper. I mean, we know they're there. So it very well could have ended on this episode, but thank the maker it's not. We're going to get that other season upcoming. And Kevin Kiner, good Lord, Kevin Kiner. Kevin Kiner, there's nothing I can say about this man that hasn't been said already on this show. The man is brilliant. I'm ready to put Kevin Kiner on level with John Williams at this point. He's that good at what he does. I adore Maestro Williams. Nobody will ever be as good at him. Kiner's right there with him, though. I mean, this guy puts in a stellar performance week in and week out. His Thrawn theme is, oh my gosh, absolutely chilling. And we hear that a lot through this episode. And just the emotion evoked by the music he composes week in and week out, the incorporation of some of the original Williams stuff that he uses. I mean, it's just... It's unprecedented. It's unmatched. I will take a Kevin Kiner soundtrack any day of the week, no matter what the show is at this point. But he does such a phenomenal job on this. I can't say enough. Boom. I mean, just it's all right there. The animation, her work is incredible as always. The movement of the AT-ATs, the dogfights between the A-wings and the TIE fighters. I mean, the combat on the planet. I mean, it was all very well animated and very well done. And the Bindu cloud. Gorgeous. And Kiner's music did bring it all together. And the voice actors were just right. All of them were firing on all cylinders in this episode. They all did tremendous and fabulous jobs. And it was just all around a fun episode. And I'm not going to gush anymore on Kevin Kiner. I could go on the rest of the night and turn this into too long of an episode, but it was a great episode. I mean, I definitely really enjoyed it. And grading this episode, it's going to get an A for me. I really did enjoy this episode. I had everything that we needed. It felt like Star Wars. It sounded like Star Wars. And it was Thrawn to a T. And it definitely, as you said, it left us wanting more. It left me wanting more than I could ever have imagined it would have. So it was definitely an A all the way. David, how would you grade her?
Oh, yes, A as well. I think very strong A. I didn't want to interrupt you as you were talking, because all your points, I'm just, agreeing with them. I like what you said, the measuring stick. I do agree with that. I think every episode of Rebels, of course, it's probably unfair to measure it against Twilight of the Apprentice because of the buildup and so on and so forth. But again, I don't think we'd be doing a justice to Rebels' reaction and this whole podcast if, we didn't reference back to that last year. And again, that's an A+ for me, the Twilight of the Red, that's the measuring stick. And so it makes sense to compare this. It does have different elements. Not the big battle between, Ahsoka and Vader, but like you said, the space battle out there is incredible. And so definitely an A. thoroughly enjoyed it. I've watched it 3 times. Obviously I will watch it more. there's no question. And so what an incredible way to end season 3.
Excellent. I agree. Definitely. It's going to be so much fun. Season 3 has been quite the ride, for Rebels. So definitely really good. But, let's move on here because we got some emails and, well, we got an email and let's take a look and see what it says.
The name's Rex. Now let's check some emails.
All right. This email is from Trevor Duncanson. He wrote us after we aired, after our first review of Part 1 went live. And Trevor says that he loved what they did, to close the season and how most loose ends were tied up. I especially love the running joke of Ezra never getting a jetpack. And that joke never gets old, does it?
No.
Yeah. I do, however, have a few questions and comments about the series going forward. Question 1, why haven't we seen the base on Dantooine? Rex specifically mentions that they're heading to Yavin at the end of the episode, so I'm surprised there's no mention of Dantooine. I feel like there's an old Jedi temple on the planet that could create a nice plot point for Kanan and Ezra. Okay, Dantooine. Very good question. We know we do see Dantooine from orbit in Secret Cargo. And we know from A New Hope that there is a base there. An old Rebel base. But to quote the communications officer that notified Tarkin, it looks like it had been abandoned for some time. Here's my theory on that. And this is just my theory. Probably what's happened is Dantooine probably has already had a Rebel cell base on it, which it now has been, by this point, is going to wind up being abandoned as they begin to consolidate their forces into the Alliance. The massive fleet is launched from Yavin to attack Scarif in Rogue One. So probably by this point, whatever Rebel cell was occupying a base on Dantooine may have already abandoned it. That's just my theory. But who knows? David, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I've thought about that as well. I like what Trevor said, that it'd be neat to go there. I do wonder, one of the things that happened, I believe, right, when Lucasfilm was purchased by Disney is that the budget for Rebels is significantly less than what it was for Clone Wars. I think you've mentioned it before on previous shows and previous years of Rebels reactions that George Lucas had the purse strings and he opened up his wallet and just spent the money on Clone Wars and made it just look gorgeous. And so I just wonder, and you hear Killian Plunkett talk about this at times on Rebels Recon, that to render these things, to make these assets, takes time and effort and money. And so I wonder if just for the sake of, cost, that they did it that way. Right, you and I have seen on a number of episodes in all 3 seasons, the Imperial pilots that are on there with Governor Price or with Thrawn or Constantine, they're the same character model, right? Mm-hmm. With the hat pulled down, which really conveys, again, having to really, be efficient in what they do and keep costs down. So I do wonder, in terms of creating a base, creating all those assets, that they just said they just made a decision not to do that. So just some thoughts on my part that it might be cost related.
It very well could be. And it's probably more of a realistic factor to it than my little theory. It's definitely interesting. We haven't seen Dantooine. It would be nice to see what the base looked like on Dantooine, but I'm picturing it kind of very similar to Chopper base, but just with a different ecosystem,
yeah,
along those lines. Yeah. So he does have a second question here. Trevor continues with the question: if Ahsoka is still alive, how is she going to be reintroduced into the series with no real threat going forward, other than more Empire and no Dark Force user? Honestly, my friend, I don't think we're going to see her reintroduced. I think we're done with Ahsoka. Is her story over? Probably not. I think Dave still has a whole story in the back of his head that he hasn't shared. Is she alive? I would like to believe so. But I don't think her story will continue on Rebels. I think we will not see her again in this series, because it then presents too many questions that would need to be answered, and it would present too many situations that would have to be resolved at that point. Because then at that point, we would need that second... We would need a second Vader Ahsoka fight. Somebody would have to take her out. And because she's not around in the subsequent years of the Rebellion. So, you know, if she did get reintroduced, she would have to be gone by the time A New Hope rolls around. And we're not far from A New Hope. So that would be I think that would be too much to deal with in too short of a time frame, in my opinion. David, thoughts?
Yeah, and this one, yes, absolutely agree with you. I just, very difficult to bring her back. Try to do, you know, Ahsoka Vader 2 would just not carry the weight that we just talked about, that Twilight of the Apprentice carried last year. So I agree with you. I don't think they're going to reintroduce her. It's still a mystery. But Aaron, we do know that Ahsoka lives because there's Ahsoka Lives Day at Celebration. Okay, it's official. Okay,
that is true. Ahsoka lives at Celebration. So,
That's right.
Yeah, it definitely is. Some great questions. I definitely appreciate the email, Trevor. Some great insight, and definitely we appreciate your thoughts. And everybody, I mean, send us your thoughts whenever you watch the episode. You can always email us at rebelsreactions@coffeewithkenobi.com and let us know what you think as this episode's air. Season 4, of course, will be here in the fall, so we'll be anxiously waiting with bated breath. Celebration's coming up around the corner, too. We're, at the time of this recording, we are just a week and a half away from Celebration. Something like that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So it is right around the corner, and keep an eye on your Rebels Reactions Twitter feed and everything. I will be posting from Celebration. I plan on hitting up the Rebels panel and seeing who I can see. And if you're at Celebration, man, and if you see me at Celebration, hit me up, man. Let's talk Rebels or Star Wars in general. It's going to be so much fun. This will be my first Celebration, as I've said before, so I'm really looking forward to it. There's going to be a lot going on. Let's just make it happen, man. It's going to be great. David, if somebody wants to continue talking Rebels and Star Wars with you, what is their best way to do that at this time?
Yeah, as always, it hasn't changed. It's my first name and last name. So David, then _ and last name Modders, Modders. And just like you said, Aaron, I hope to be there and see you a whole bunch. I want to be at the podcast stage on Thursday, right? 4:30 to 5:30. See Dan and Corey do their thing. And like you said, I hope people come up and say hi. And right, like you said earlier in this episode, the Star Wars has brought a lot of happiness and joy and people together. And that's my big thing, is the community. And so going to Celebration, I'm just geeked out of my mind. And so I'm excited and want to see all the Coffee with Kenobi people I can. So it'll be a lot of fun. And so I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's a great thing. And I'm glad you brought up the podcast stage. Dan and Corey are going to be having a live Coffee with Kenobi on the show on the podcast stage. So check that out. It's Thursday at 4:30 at the podcast stage at Celebration Orlando. Check it out. I definitely will be in attendance for that. You couldn't drag me away with promises of meeting the whole Rebels crew. Actually, you probably could if that was the case. I have to think about what I say from now on. You tell me you're taking me into a room with the whole Rebels crew just to sit down and visit. Yeah, I probably would go. Sorry, Dan. Sorry, Corey. Attend the podcast, AJ. It's going to be great. A lot of fun. So check that out. And of course, it's got time in the interim between now and then. Dan and Corey have been doing some Road to Celebration shows for our flagship show, Coffee with Kenobi. Check those out. It gives you some great insight of what to expect and what's coming, and gets you prepared for Celebration all around. So check those out. Check out our other shows too. Comics with Kenobi, Lattes with Leia, and of course, Legends Library. If you're going to Celebration, of course, the co-host of Lattes with Leia, Amy Ratcliffe, she'll be one of the hosts at Celebration. So Coffee with Kenobi will be well represented. But check it out. Check out the coffeewithkenobi.com. All our blogs are there. Some great bloggers. So some great information there as well. So check it all out. Of course, if you do want to contact me directly, the best way to do that is via Twitter, at TAHarris121079. You can follow Rebels Reactions on Twitter as well for all their all the stuff we'll be posting for Celebration at Rebels Reactions there on Twitter. You can also email me directly, aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com. Overall, it is just going to be a rodeo in this offseason for sure. I can't wait to see what happens coming up season 4. It's probably going to be the longest several months of my life waiting for the season premiere to come up, but it's going to, and it's going to be fabulous. So thank you so much, everybody, for sticking with us and enjoying this and listening throughout the season. David, thank you for joining me tonight, my friend.
Always. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. And of course, Joe was with us for a little bit. Hope you're feeling better, buddy. And definitely, it was good having you on for our first part and for the beginning of this episode as well. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Rebels Reactions. I do appreciate it. Y'all are the greatest listeners and Star Wars fans out there, and I greatly appreciate y'all giving us time on your podcast player. So thank you so much for listening. Remember, this is the podcast you're looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed @coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.